You're listening to The Source News on 4EB Global Digital.
For news you need to know, listen to The Source News every Tuesday and Thursday at 5pm.
The Source News, for your local news in and around Brisbane and the Gold Coast.
Good evening, I'm Sophie Oxford, and let's see what's making news across Australia this evening. Melbourne has reported 55 new coronavirus cases and 8 COVID deaths. This marks the state's lowest single-day growth in more than 10 weeks. The COVID death toll, however, has increased to 683, and 7 out of the latest 8 COVID deaths have been linked to aged care outbreaks. Stage 4 restrictions will continue for Melbourne at least for another fortnight beyond the 13th of September, which was the original end date. For restrictions to lift in Melbourne, the city must record an average between 30 and 50 new cases a day over a 2-week period. In other news, a Western Sydney student who was falsely diagnosed with COVID-19 has received an apology from health authorities after getting his school shut down. Some staff and other students were told to isolate whilst the school was being cleaned. The student who attends Lidcombe Public School tested positive for coronavirus on the weekend. However, further tests then showed they were not infected. The school has now reopened and the staff and students are out of isolation and back to face-to-face learning. Deputy Prime Minister Michael McCormack has been accused of presenting alternative facts after linking Victoria's second wave of COVID-19 to a Black Lives Matter protest on Q&A. Mr. McCormack said, along with hotel quarantine failures, Black Lives Matter rallies can't have helped in sparking a second wave in the state. Host Hamish McDonald challenged the Deputy PM, citing the Victorian Department of Health and Human Services, which said there is no evidence that the protesters contracted the virus at the protests. Fellow panellist Senator Christina Kennelly said she was gobsmacked by Mr. McCormack's comments, accusing him of presenting alternative facts and engaging in Trumpism. WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange faces a setback in his bid to delay his extradition to the United States from the United Kingdom. Assange appeared in a London court on Monday, resuming his extradition hearing following a month-long delay due to COVID-19 restrictions. The case comes after the US claims that Assange conspired to hack government computers and that he put people's lives at risk. Assange's lawyers applied for an adjournment of the case until January to allow more time to consider the new US accusations. However, the judge rejected the application. If found guilty of all charges, Assange could face up to 175 years in prison. Those responsible for the death of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi have been spared from execution after being forgiven by the deceased family. Saleh Khashoggi, the son of the slain writer, announced that the family had forgiven the killers, allowing them to be pardoned from execution in accordance with Islamic law. In 2018, Mr. Khashoggi was killed inside the Saudi consulate while collecting marriage documents, allowing him to marry his Turkish fiancée who waited outside. 8 people were sentenced for the murder of Mr. Khashoggi, with 5 people receiving the maximum sentence of 20 years jail time, 1 receiving 10 years and the other 2 receiving 7. The Saudi trial concluded that the killing was not premeditated, a decision which has been criticized publicly by human rights groups and other news media who say that the killing was orchestrated by the Saudi government. Now to the shares. Australian shares made a small recovery yesterday, with various industries doing positively in light of the current coronavirus epidemic, even building on that momentum for shares to begin their day higher. By 8 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, ASX futures were up 25 points and Wall Street was closed for the Labor Day long weekend. The Australian dollar is steady at 72.75 US cents and jumping to 55.24 British pounds on the increasing chance of a no-deal Brexit. This no-deal Brexit comes out of reports that British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is preparing to walk away from talks with the European Union if a trade deal is not reached by mid-October. The entertainment industry remains locked down as concerts are postponed or altogether cancelled, as restriction on gathering sizes and social distancing rules are still heavily reinforced. It is unlikely to see the entertainment industry open anytime soon. Australian global superstar Troye Sivan has become a prominent artist who has voiced the challenges he is facing during lockdown in Melbourne, taking this time as an opportunity for growth. Troy has recently released a new EP named In a Dream with accompanying music video filmed entirely from his brother's spare room in Melbourne. Denzel Baker, a 23-year-old Indigenous dancer and rapper, has spoken out about the underlying shame in Indigenous communities. From first-hand experience, Baker says that growing up in a small rural community, the stigma of being Indigenous within oneself would stop him from attempting to strive to achieve goals. Baker was able to break past these walls, and through his national platform, he endeavours to combat that feeling many people in the Indigenous communities feel, so that they too will have the confidence to push themselves harder. Now on to a little bit of sad news. Little 4-year-old Charlotte Jones is fighting for her life in the Queensland Children's Hospital. Her New South Wales-based father is applying again for an exemption to be able to visit her without having to quarantine for 14 days. Charlotte has leukemia and has been in Brisbane with her mother, Melissa, since January and until early August. Her father, Brad Jones, was visiting regularly. Now the border is closed, he cannot re-enter unless he has an exemption and quarantines, all at his own expense. That's a bit of a sad story there. Imagine not being able to see your little girl. Hopefully that gets sorted out soon and he's back with her soon. In the midst of the COVID-19 wreaking havoc across the globe, you'd be lucky to find any professional sport taking place. However, if you looked in your own backyard, the Australian racing industry kept ticking over. Caleb Jackson has the report.
Chautauqua very late. It's English a half length in front. Can he do it? Chautauqua, he's flying. Yes, there's history. Chautauqua makes it 3 in a row. That is unbelievable.
They go hard and they go fast. They go so hard and so fast that not even a global pandemic could stop them. Despite all the twists and turns COVID-19 has thrown at the Australian racing industry, its resilience has proven a force to be reckoned with. Racing on the mainland cannot be stopped. With COVID-19 hitting in the lead up to the Brisbane Winter Carnival, Gold Coast-based trainer Trent Evans jumped straight onto the front foot in order to ensure the fate of racing.
When this all came about, we went and saw some like temperature guns, hand wash stations, all that kind of stuff. But it's all basically on our own back, just trying to do the right thing.
The continuation of racing is ultimately a credit to all involved in the great sport, and Evans believes without the diligence of the staff, the industry would be non-existent during this devastating period in time.
Everyone in our place really, really good. They've been adhering to the protocols and sort of doing their best because, being realistic, they know that they need to work and basically they've just been really, really stringent in how they're carrying themselves.
With border closures put in place by Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk, Queensland jockeys are now restricted to riding within the Sunshine State. For Group 1 winning jockey Robbie Fryer, this means his regular midweek trips south of the border have come to a halt.
My trips down Northern Rivers has stopped and, you know, obviously because we can't go down there. But saying that, I think Racing Queensland's done a great job.
The South African veteran is just thankful he can still ride at all.
And I think Keurig kind of put some good precautions in, and I think it's helped a lot. Because the fact that we're still racing is a great thing. So they've done a great job.
Although racing couldn't be stopped, race days went from this. To this. But recent weeks have proven that there is light at the end of the tunnel for racegoers, as Queensland racetracks have opened their gates and welcomed back patrons just in time for Queensland to get a glimpse of their Group 1 champion Alligator Blood before he heads off to Sydney.
That was journalist Caleb Jackson reporting for Source News. Students of healthcare-related degrees have been particularly hard hit by COVID-19. With changes to study modes and a lack of in-person contact for practical assessments having a major impact on their studies, students say they feel let down by their universities, who say they haven't done enough to ensure they are meeting all the requirements of their degrees. Here's Daniel Perotti with more.
Priyanka Reddy, a first-year nursing and midwifery student at the University of Queensland, says that although her university improved its approach in adapting to COVID-19 between the first and second semesters, lack of contact hours has taken a toll on her studies, and she doesn't feel the university has done enough to compensate for lost practical work.
In the first semester, when all the unis were sort of adjusting to Corona, I missed a whole semester of placement, which was really disappointing because as a first year, you want to get in there and do as much as you can. And all of my clinical classes were online, all my lectures were recorded and online. And coming into semester two, the unis definitely, I guess, improved their way of executing their lessons and stuff like that. But they haven't really announced anything to compensate for the first semester of placements. In regards to the clinical lessons online, there were live Zoom sessions, so we got to talk to the tutor. It wasn't just like a video we had to watch, which was good. And one skill that we had to do was an abdo-palp, which is where you feel the stomach to feel where the baby's head is lying in its position. Obviously, that's really hard to do over a Zoom course, so they did actually set up a one-day thing where students could come in and we socially distanced and did the class on mannequins. And we had to sanitize and all that sort of thing. So that was like one good thing that they did, but I don't think it was enough to really like set us up for placement in semester two.
Do you feel prepared considering the changes that have been made to mandatory placements and just in general?
Like I said, in semester one, we missed out all of our clinical lessons in our mock hospital. So these skills that were required of us as assumed knowledge in semester two, we never actually got to do it in person. So coming into a hospital setting, not knowing how to do these basic things was really daunting. And especially when you're collaborating with other RNs who expect you to know this stuff and you don't. And I guess I feel prepared with the basic stuff that we did at the beginning of the semester when coronavirus wasn't an issue. But it's definitely daunting trying to get into the hospital setting without the fear of hurting a patient or something like that.
In addition to restrictions on practical work making her feel unprepared, Priyanka says she's disappointed that the university still expects payment of amenities fees, despite students of nursing and other healthcare-related degrees being unable to use the amenities on campus.
In my opinion, I think it's ridiculous that we're getting asked to pay $154 a semester for amenities that we're not using. Because I am in a clinical setting surrounded by people who are immunocompromised. I can't actually put myself in that position to go into campus, even to study in the library. So I think it's just a little bit unfair of the uni to be asking of that when students aren't actually using the amenities.
Simona Stadiljkovic, a nursing student from Southern Cross University in regional New South Wales, says her university's adaptation to COVID-19 conditions was to almost completely halt in-person contact.
We don't have any face-to-face lab classes. We have take-home packs that we can take home and practice on teapots or oranges. Mm-hmm. And the online tutorials that we do get, the lecturers are reading from textbooks, and it's not really anything like beneficial for us.
In contrast to Priyanka's statements about the University of Queensland, Simona says her university's handling of COVID-19 has in fact worsened between the first and second semesters, resulting in her feeling unprepared when it came time to participate in mandatory placements.
I feel like session one was a bit more organised than session two was, even though it was their first time dealing with this type of situation. The second session has been all over the shop. Like, we've had different teachers like jumping in and out of the online tutorials, and they don't know what's going on and what we're up to in our study schedule.
Did you feel prepared when it came to applying the knowledge you'd learnt in your courses to your actual placements at all?
No way. We've had no experience whatsoever, just online tutorials where the teachers are talking us through the procedures and then deeming us competent in those skills. And then they're thinking that once we're on placement, that we can get our practice that way.
Despite in-person class time being virtually eliminated and considerable student backlash, there have been no fee reductions. And Simona says students are paying for an education while not receiving the full experience.
There has been no changes in any of the fees. Even the little student contribution fee has still been charged to everyone's account, even though there has been numerous students that have complained to the uni of ignored emails about the fee, and we're still paying up to $300 a session. We're paying for an education and we're not getting the full experience.
That was Daniel Perotti with the full report. There is no doubt COVID-19 hit everybody pretty hard. However, those working with young children and the disabled have faced an even bigger challenge. I was fortunate enough to be able to interview Miss Maria and her mother, who are two childcare workers who help those less fortunate. The COVID pandemic has been a struggle for everyone. However, those who work in childcare have faced a bigger challenge. Two workers who work closely with children discuss what it is like working in the pandemic and how they keep them and the children safe and entertained. Today I'm with Maria Pena Fuentes and we will be talking about what it is like working with young children in the middle of a pandemic. So Maria, what's it like? Has work for you decreased or increased since the start of the pandemic?
Definitely seen a decrease for work. Since I'm a babysitter, obviously the parents have also seen a decrease in their work, which means they're spending more time at home and there's no need for a babysitter right now.
Would you say your tactics and how you deal with the children has changed? Like, what activities do you do with them and do you have to do more schoolwork with them?
I have two families that I do babysitting for. One family has little babies, little kids. So, like, you've got a 5-month-old, a 2-year-old, and a 3-year-old. And obviously with them, I just take the precautions. So, like, the washing of hands and making sure that they're not touching anything when we go to... Well, not touching anything, but, like, you know, touching things and then touching their face when we go to the park. Making sure that they're on top of their own hygiene when we get home and stuff. But with the older kids, obviously you've seen a shift because for them, since they're at school, normally I only see them school holidays, but now I'm starting to see them a lot more during the week since their parents like have to go out, get groceries and stuff, and they're 5 kids, so they don't want to take all those kids out right now, especially. So they just want to stay home. But yeah, no, with them, I'm definitely helping them with a lot of their schoolwork, online schooling and stuff, and it's been quite interesting.
So I'm with Melba Fuentes, and today we'll be talking about what it's like looking after kids with special needs and has anything changed within the pandemic with working with them. So Melba, what has changed since starting in the pandemic? Are you looking after more kids or the same?
Just the same. But right now it's a little bit slow, I think, because some of them get sick, so I'm not allowed to be there. But normally it's 5-6 hours a day, so I'm still doing my normal hour.
And do you wear a mask, or how do you make sure you keep yourself from getting sick if the children are sick, or how do you keep yourself the children from getting sick? Like, how do you do that?
That is a big issue because I can't wear mask in front of the children because they get scared of the mask and they cannot have mask on either because they suffocated. So it's a big risk, and the only thing what I have to do is try to be a little bit the social distancing with them, and it's very hard because they always want cuddles and clothes, but it's the only thing what I can do.
And do you still would you still say you take the children out, like maybe to go to the shops or to the park or anything, or has that all had to stop and you've had to go to like board games or something?
Yeah, everything, all the outings have to stop at the moment, and just doing things in the house, and the activities outside the house is just therapies for them, but we cannot stop doing that. It's the only thing, but park, library, and all the rest of the things has to stop.
Both Melba and Maria will continue practicing COVID safe measures while keeping the kids they look after safe and healthy and happy.
It's no secret that many members of the music industry are struggling to maintain a meaningful community in times like these. While all this is going on, another group of internet-based artists have taken what they have and created a bizarre and experimental world of music that has continued to thrive despite the coronavirus' impact on the music industry. Alex Tickner has taken a closer look into the community and explored the significance and impact that such a diverse sound has had on the music industry thus far.
2020 has truly been a turbulent time for the entertainment industry, and there aren't many signs of anything going back to normal anytime soon. Live music in most parts of the world is essentially non-existent thanks to COVID-19, and a huge amount of musicians are left without a job, any sort of income, and have lost the ability to do what they love for a living. While many musicians have been left wondering what else could possibly go wrong, another group of musicians have managed to take full advantage of the quarantine restrictions that we've all been under in one form or another, and have created their own thriving community and subgenre. The most prominent artists making waves in the scene would be the duo 100 Gex. ...15-year-old O.S. Quinn. And David Shorty. The type of music coming from these artists has been defined as hyperpop, as it's characterized by fast-driving bass drums sitting amongst cute high-pitched melodies. Starting as a small underground subgenre in the early 2010s, the style has become so big that there are now record labels completely dedicated to it. With the music being so electronically based, it has motivated thousands of young and aspiring musicians to try their hand at expressing themselves in such an experimental and vulnerable way through the safety of their laptop. I spoke to Brisbane producer Jesse Rainford about how he got involved in the style, his roots in music, and how he feels the quarantine has affected his music. What kind of genre did you first start producing in?
Straight up just like trap.
Trap?
Basically SoundCloud trap. That was basically what I started off with because it just seemed fun. It's an easy place to start, I found, but it's still it's fun and it gets you the basics, I found.
Since quarantine beginning, would you say that you produce more or about the same amount?
Way more. Oh my goodness, way more. Okay. I counted the other day. I counted 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I created, I think, 35 beats in that time.
Would there be any negatives that you've been experiencing kind of having this time and the self-reflection in isolation?
Yeah, I'd definitely say so, because, I get a lot of good brain chemicals when I get to go outside and go on trips and stuff.
Mm.
I can't even go home and see family at the moment because borders all closed up. So it has been some days you feel pretty shit about it and kind of have no motivation. But yeah, I'd definitely say I look at it more critically now. I'm definitely scrapping a lot more than what I'm keeping. I found the ones that have been I've actually am happy with. I'm really happy with.
Good. Yeah. I also got the chance to briefly talk to Melbourne artist Cease on the phone about his latest EP.
If quarantine didn't happen, I wouldn't have even finished my EP.
With the hyperpop community being so accessible to join, it has attracted all kinds of people, making the community a wildly diverse bunch. The genre has become a safe place for the LGBTQ+ community to express themselves freely, with many transgender artists dominating the genre. The community also holds almost weekly Zoom concerts, in which thousands of people donate to causes like COVID-19 relief and the Black Lives Matter movement. In scary times like these, it's really important to try to find some kind of beauty within the darkness that is seemingly taking over the world. From the depths of the suburbs to the biggest cities in the world, the new hyperpop community that has taken the music industry by storm is easily one of the most positive things to come out of 2020 so far. And even if hyperpop doesn't become the face of pop music in the future, it has still served as a way for absolutely anybody to express themselves, and that in itself is meaningful enough.
That was Alex Tickner with his up-close look into the impact of the hyperpop community.
Now to Mr. Caleb Jackson with sport news and the weather.
The Australian men's cricket team will play against England in the third and final match of the 2020 series tomorrow morning. Despite England wrapping up the series in the first two games, Australia still have plenty to play for with their number one world ranking on the line. After losing two games in a row for the first time in almost 2 years, Australian all-rounder Ashton Agar says spirits are still high amongst the group and they take a great deal of pride in being ranked number one. In the NRL, the St. George Illawarra Dragons have announced Anthony Griffin as head coach for at least the next 2 seasons. Griffin will return to a head coaching role in 2021 after departing the Penrith Panthers late in the 2018 season. With a winning record of over 50% from 173 first-grade games, Dragons Chief Executive Ryan Webb believes Griffin's appointment is one of the most important decisions the club has made in recent times. CEO Gil McLaughlin has reminded players and officials currently living in the transition hub that the competition's move to Queensland is not a holiday. McLaughlin has made it clear to all representatives that there cannot be any breaches of rules put in place by the AFL and the Queensland government. Any breaches will be treated severely with the potential to remove people from the hub. Brisbane's weather tomorrow will be mostly sunny with a 20% chance of rain, a top temperature of 24 degrees and a low of 13 degrees.
That's all we have time for tonight. Thank you guys for listening and thank you Caleb for the news and the weather.